Will You Strike While He's Still Loading? By Shaney. Read by Patica. Part 3 of the Don't Look Too Closely, All Angles Are Oblique series. Summary. Fury says, "You're fucking with me. You expect me to send in some random person to replace you? When you've already got a strong rapport with Stark? However you managed it." Fury shakes his head, but smiles a little ruefully. "I'd have to be a moron to try and reassign you. Stark would shut down any attempt at replacing you." He shakes his head again. "You keep surprising me," he says. "You're sure you don't feel coerced in any way?" "Not in the slightest, Director. If anyone tricked anyone, I tricked him. I don't want this information used against Tony," Steve says. His voice is commanding as he knows how to make it. Fury holds up both hands, not in surrender, but as if to balance. "No one but me needs to know this, and I hope to never talk about Stark's sex life ever again." There's finally some amusement in his voice. Steve's shoulders relax. "I do have a recommendation, however," Fury says. "Sir?" Steve asks. "Tell him who you are. Stark does not like surprises. He won't appreciate finding out after the fact." Fury gives him a long look. "That's not an order, but think about it. If he finds out and you aren't the one that tells him, he's going to react badly." Fury calls Steve early Friday afternoon. Steve hadn't slept. He had painted all night, and then had taken his customary run in the morning. He had felt it, subspace according to Tony, strongly for at least 3 hours, and then it had subsided slowly into normalcy after that. Nevertheless, Steve doesn't feel like he's missed any sleep. He isn't sure that has anything to do with the subspace, though. Since the serum, Steve is usually fine with missing a night of sleep.
"When can you be here?" Fury asks without preamble.
Steve considers this for a few seconds, pondering the time and the traffic, and eventually says, 25 minutes or so, depending on the traffic.
"I'll see you then,"
Fury says, and hangs up. Steve looks thoughtfully at his phone. He has no idea what Fury wants, but his voice hadn't been any gruffer than usual, so he isn't exactly worried about it either. The fact that Fury wants him at S.H.I.E.L.D. rather than talking to him over the phone definitely means secrets, but Steve isn't confused or surprised by that either. He doesn't change clothes. He's wearing jeans and the cream-colored shirt that had come with the suit. He figures that if Fury wanted him in uniform, he'd have mentioned it. Besides, Fury is apparently in a hurry. Steve's bike is parked on the street. At least 3 of his neighbors had mentioned that it might not be a good idea to do so, one of them giving him directions to a secure parking garage 1.5 blocks away. But Steve hasn't really considered moving it. He likes having it close enough to be able to get to it easily. The traffic isn't bad. He turns into the parking garage for S.H.I.E.L.D.'s headquarters in New York with 3 or 4 minutes to spare. He has his own parking spot, and has had it since he'd bought the bike. One day he'd bought a bike, the next day the spot had appeared. Steve had tried to politely decline. No one had listened. So he parks in his allotted spot and makes his way to the security checkpoint. It takes a couple of minutes to get through. Steve always has to do the retina scanner at least twice, as he can't quite keep himself from flinching away at the first pass of the red light. And then he's walking inside with no particular idea where he's going. He'd lived on the base for the last few months, but he's still only seen Director Fury twice, and he's never been near his office or command center, or whatever it is he uses. Until he'd been assigned to liaise with Stark Industries, Steve hadn't even actually realized that it was a S.H.I.E.L.D. base rather than an Army base. His movements had been limited. Agent Coulson falls into step at one side of him, about 50 feet in, and says, "Director Fury's waiting for you. If you'd come this way." Coulson is apparently one of those rare men that can lead while staying directly in step with someone.
so Steve doesn't end up feeling like he's trailing along behind him. He doesn't try to make conversation either, which Steve appreciates at the same time that it makes him feel even less like he's one of them. He doesn't exactly feel like a part of the U.S. Army anymore, either. In fact, the only time he feels like he's comfortably where he's supposed to be is when he's alone with Tony Stark. And isn't that something S.H.I.E.L.D. and the Army would love to hear? Steve doesn't realize he's smirking a little until Coulson throws an unassuming but inquiring look in his direction. "Just thinking about how strange my life is," Steve mutters with a little shrug. If it's any consolation, this morning I had to write a report on the effects of bioengineered flora on human sexuality, with video attachments and footnotes. Coulson's voice is wry. "Seriously?" Steve asks, brows arched. "Seriously," Coulson says. "I'm not saying your life isn't strange. I can only imagine what it must be like for you. But, like I said, if it helps, your life isn't the only one that's not what you were expecting." Steve gives Coulson a small smile. "It does help, actually," he says truthfully. "Thank you." Coulson flushes faintly as he nods. Steve pretends not to notice, because he's a gentleman. Coulson stops in front of a door. Distantly, Steve can hear the murmur of other people speaking in quick, insistent tones. He assumes that way lies what passes for a command center here. The only thing about the door they've stopped at that distinguishes it from other doors they've passed is that there is a cartoon of a man with an eye patch stomping up and down on the spine of a supine man in a suit. There are a series of symbols stringing out in a cartoon bubble that Steve recognizes as stand-ins for swear words. "And he doesn't mind that?" Steve asks curiously. The drawing has yellowed a bit and curled at the edges. It's obviously been there a long time. "He snarls every time he sees it," Coulson says. "But he never takes it down." His face is perfectly bland, but his voice has a very slight smiling tone. Steve raises his hand to knock, but Coulson murmurs, "Go right in, he's expecting you." "Thanks," Steve says. Coulson nods, and Steve opens the door and walks in. There's nothing particularly special about the office. It's of a good size and is neat and well-ordered. The computer display on the wall crammed with information. The desk itself strewn with files, but in a configuration that seems to indicate there's method in the arrangement. There's a table in one corner, enough to seat three or four. A command staff table, Steve is guessing. There's a couch against the wall behind the desk. Fury is standing by the desk, one file open, looking like he's relaxed and ready to leap into action at the same time. Steve would smile. Except he's not sure Fury would appreciate it. Fury looks like Steve feels most of the time. He doesn't look up immediately, so Steve falls into parade rest and waits for him. He's not sure how long he's been waiting, less than 2 minutes, when Fury kicks something next to the desk. It's the contract briefcase. "Do you know how many contracts Stark has signed for the U.S. government in the last year?" Fury asks without looking up. "No, sir," Steve says. 2, Fury says. He kicks the briefcase again. "And 3 for S.H.I.E.L.D. And all of those were for security measures for our in-country bases." Fury finally looks up at Steve, calculating. "Which means that, in the last 10 days, you've managed to make him sign quadruple that number, apparently without even trying." Fury twitches the open file. "Apparently, he's willing to build you helicopters, Captain." "Most of what he signed are just preliminary contracts for research and development," Steve hedges. "Not sure if he's here to be interrogated or congratulated." "This morning he brought in 16 signed contracts," Fury says. Steve frowns slightly. There hadn't been 16 signable contracts in the last batch. There had been 12, tops, and a couple of them had been questionable. Stark hasn't willingly brought anything to the table since he stopped making weapons, Fury tells Steve. And this morning, he brought in 6 specific contracts detailing things he's had in development for months. 6 contracts that I would have bet dimes to dollars that we'd never have access to. Fury cocks his head at Steve. What did you do to him? Steve blinks. Nothing, he says. I helped him sort out the contracts that he would take from those that I was pretty sure he would never take. We talked about the uses for certain things in the field. He pauses. Okay, so the Yellow Jackets I more or less begged for on bended knees. No, practically about it, of course. But I didn't do anything to him. Fury is looking at him steadily. Did the army give you unconscionable orders? He asks, the concern in his voice barely there. Steve appreciates it anyway. Not precisely. They were dubious orders, but they were loosely worded enough that I don't feel constrained by them. Does he know who you are? Fury asks. No, sir, Steve says. I felt it better to keep that information private until or unless it concerns Mr. Stark. Fury looks at him pointedly, so Steve admits, I'm not willing to dangle Captain America in front of him like bait. So you're saying he's just taken a shine to you? Fury says, the disbelief just as faint as the concern had been. I'm not trying to make him do anything he doesn't want to do, Steve says frankly. I don't cajole him about weapons he's never going to build, or try to convince him to cede the Iron Man technology to the military for the greater good. That they even feel like they need it is ridiculous. They've got War Machine, and they haven't been able to reverse engineer anything from him. They can't even effectively repair the suit they have. Colonel Rhodes goes to Tony for repairs. More importantly, the suit isn't going to actually help them. They couldn't afford to make them in any quantity. They just want the secret because they can't stand not having it. There's also the matter of keeping the secret out of enemy hands, Captain, Fury notes, but it doesn't sound like he's actually arguing. As long as Tony Stark is the only one that knows, it is effectively protected from falling into enemy hands, sir, Steve says evenly. He's a paranoid bastard, I'll give you that, Fury says. Which brings us back to the contracts. Why now, all of a sudden? Why you? Stark hasn't had a meeting with a SHIELD liaison that lasted more than 20 minutes in the entire time we've had a liaison in place. But the first time you go to see him, the two of you stay locked up in his office for more than 2 hours, and you come out with a briefcase full of bling? How? You must have had some reason to think I could be successful when you gave me this assignment, Steve says, a little pointedly. Fury sighs. Honestly, I thought Captain America might have some success. I would have bet against Captain Steve Rogers. Steve thinks for several long seconds. The question isn't how to lie to Fury. The question is, does he need to lie to Fury? For his own part, Steve doesn't feel much of a need to. But whether or not Tony would want Fury to know? If he should put this information into Fury's hands, knowing that he might be able to use it against Tony in the future. That's the real question. Permission to speak off the record, sir? Steve asks finally. Fury frowns faintly. Off the record apart from SHIELD, or entirely off the record? He asks finally, and Steve is relieved that Fury is willing to admit that there is a difference. Entirely off the record, sir, Steve says. Fury looks like he's musing over that for a long moment, and then he moves over to the computer display and taps at it for a moment. A red square appears on the bottom of the screen. For the sake of global security, I could only keep that up for about 2 minutes, he says. Talk to me. I'm sleeping with him, Steve says. Fury looks shocked, which should not be as funny as Steve finds it.
Steve blames Tony. During our first meeting, he indicated that he might be willing to exchange goods for services, and I agreed.
He bribed you? Fury says, looking like he's well on his way toward, well, Fury.
That may have been his intention, but it would be more accurate to say that I allowed him to think he had bribed me in order to create a relationship in which he was willing to work with me, Steve says. I appreciate your concern, sir, but it's not necessary. I'm a consenting adult.
I don't know what the Army said to you, Captain, but you do not, under any circumstances, have to take off your clothes to fulfill orders, Fury says.
I didn't. If I hadn't been attracted to him, I would have deflected and tried another approach.
Steve's cheeks heat a little. Fury is staring at him, still looking stunned.
I like him. I was willing, and the subject never came up with regards to the second batch of contracts. I told him I wasn't willing to negotiate for contracts with sex, and he made no attempt to do so.
So, Fury says, visibly trying to pull himself together. You're telling me that the U.S. government and SHIELD's ability to negotiate with Stark Industries is dependent on your willingness to keep having sex with Tony Stark?
I don't believe so, sir. It would help a lot if the military stopped sending contracts that he's never going to sign. It would also help if whomever you send with the contracts is able to actually converse fluently with him about what the object of the contract really is. He's a genius, but he's not a soldier. You and I know that some of these things look like weapons, but are really strictly defensive measures. He's gun-shy, and I don't blame him. If it will help, I'll prep anyone you decide to send to liaise with him.
Steve will do all those things, if necessary, but he doesn't think they'll be necessary. And if they are, he doesn't think that will actually change what he's doing with Tony. The SHIELD liaison position is a good cover, but it's not really necessary if Tony still wants to do this thing.
But he's right, it's not necessary. Fury says, you're fucking with me. You expect me to send in some random person to replace you? When you've already got a strong rapport with Stark? However you managed it.
Fury shakes his head, but smiles a little ruefully.
I'd have to be a moron to try and reassign you. Stark would shut down any attempt at replacing you.
He shakes his head again.
You keep surprising me, he says. You're sure you don't feel coerced in any way?
Not in the slightest, Director. If anyone tricked anyone, I tricked him. I don't want this information used against Tony, Steve says. His voice is commanding as he knows how to make it.
Fury holds up both hands, not in surrender, but as if to balance.
No one but me needs to know this. And I hope to never talk about Stark's sex life ever again.
There is finally some amusement in his voice. Steve's shoulders relax.
I do have a recommendation, however, Fury says.
Sir? Steve asks.
Tell him who you are.
Stark does not like surprises. He won't appreciate finding out after the fact.
Fury gives him a long look.
That's not an order, but think about it. If he finds out and you aren't the one that tells him, he's going to react badly.
And SHIELD can't afford that, Steve says a little bitterly.
I'd rather not have to deal with it, but that's not why I recommended it.
He gives Steve another long look.
Dismissed. Steve spends the rest of Friday and well into the early hours of Saturday in SHIELD's gym. It's the only place he can go, really, where the fact that he kills punching bags on a regular basis isn't grounds to throw him out. Not that he could do that in a public gym at all. It's the kind of thing that would be noticed. Not to mention the fact that public gyms now are like weird, gleaming circus midways full of bizarre rides and people running for their lives without ever getting anywhere. Steve's preferred workout methods, the bags and the free weights, only occupied small, neglected corners of the gym Steve had investigated, They are not only places that would notice if Steve killed their heavy bags, but would probably make Steve pay for them as well. He wonders idly if Stark Tower has a gym, and if it does, how Tony would feel about Steve's bag killing. It would mean coming clean about being Captain America. But maybe Director Fury is right. Maybe Steve should do that anyway. He doesn't doubt Fury's assessment of Tony's probable reaction if he were to find out via some avenue other than Steve. It might be nice not having to hide it. He laughs a little, sweat damp hair falling across his forehead, and stops before he kills this particular bag, using both hands to still its momentum. If he confesses his issues with heavy bags, Tony, he's willing to bet, would take it as a challenge to create a bag that Steve couldn't kill. Moreover, Tony would probably succeed. He would crow gleefully about his own genius, but he'd also be genuinely pleased to have provided Steve with something he couldn't get elsewhere. "I'll ask him," he says out loud, and begins to unwrap his hands. "I'll tell him," he thinks, a little less certainly. He's half-hard in his jeans and realizes that he has been for a while. He'd like to do something about it, but the idea that he can't is enough to make him even harder, which is enough to make him smile. His life is very, very strange. He glances at the neatly hung, cream-colored button-up that he'd taken off before he'd started working out, and then thinks about his sweaty chest. He could shower here to avoid getting the shirt sweaty. It's a nice shirt. It's his only nice shirt, actually. But then he considers his erection. The clock on the wall tells him that it's a little after 3 in the morning, but that doesn't mean a lot here. Agents work all hours of the day and night, and there are already a half dozen people in the room doing other things. He's not embarrassed, exactly, and normally an inappropriately timed erection wouldn't stop him. But normally, an inappropriately timed erection would deflate if Steve ignored it for a couple of minutes. And he's quite sure that this one is going to be a lot more persistent. He shrugs on the shirt and buttons it up. There's a dry cleaner 2 blocks from Steve. He'll walk the whole suit over in the morning. The pants and coat probably don't really need it. But if Steve needs it again, he'd like to be sure it's crisp and clean and ready. He tells himself he'll go out and buy himself some nice shirts and slacks, even though he knows he probably won't. He is adapting, not as quickly as he might like, and he has days where he feels like he's in a foreign country. But he is. But he's never had the money to shop any place but secondhand stores, and the idea of going into any of the glass and chrome monstrosities Steve has come across makes his palms sweat nervously. He isn't even sure how he would talk to the people inside. It occurs to him that Tony would know exactly how to talk with them, but he's not quite willing to picture himself trying to explain to Tony why he needs help. Maybe if he tells Tony who he really is, it won't seem so daunting to ask for help. His bike is exactly where he left it, and Steve is grateful for the breeze once he's riding towards home. It dries most of the sweat and clears his head a little, though the rumble of the engine does nothing to assuage his erection. He parks on the street, a little amazed that he gets an open space less than half a block from his apartment, and tosses his keys absently in one hand as he takes the stairs up, 2 at a time. He knows as soon as he opens the door that someone has been inside. It's not just a hunch, though he feels that too. It's the smell. He can smell food. He moves inside slowly, locking the door almost silently behind him, and carefully moves through the entire apartment, checking for intruders in every place he can think to look. When he's sure there isn't anyone there, at least not anymore, he goes back to the kitchen and looks at the arrangement on the bar. There is a bottle of Yoo-hoo, cool to the touch, but not ice cold. So it's been here a little while. A small card in front of the bottle says, "Drink me." Steve huffs out a laugh. He's a little shocked that Tony had managed to use a reference that Steve actually gets. He He doesn't actually recognize Tony's handwriting, but he has no doubt that it is Tony's handwriting. There's a bag with two styrofoam containers inside that smells mouth-wateringly of Chinese food. Steve isn't sure that Tony had somehow known that Steve had skipped dinner. It wouldn't surprise him. The card in front of the bag says, "Eat me." The third item on the table is a square, sealed box. Steve can't begin to guess what's in it by its shape, and is considering ripping it open to see, but the card on the counter in front says, "Trust me." Steve stares at it for a long moment, and then moves back down the bar and twists off the cap of the Yoo-hoo and opens the food. He drinks the whole bottle of Yoo-hoo, but eats only about half the Chinese. He's hungry enough to eat more, but he's too focused on what's in the box to bother finishing. He does put the leftovers in the fridge. He's sure to eat them for breakfast tomorrow at the very least. He takes a final glance at the box, then strips down and takes a very brief shower, mostly to wash away the sweat of his workout. He pulls on pajama bottoms and then makes his way back to the bar and the box. The box has a thumbprint pad on the bottom, and Steve presses his thumb against it without hesitation. It makes a little hissing noise, as though the box had been pressurized, and then the whole thing unfolds into a flat surface. The thing inside it immediately makes Steve's face hot. It's the red and gold of the Iron Man suit. Steve sincerely doubts that is a coincidence. And the shape of it doesn't leave much doubt as to what it's for. The flat surface of the box's front flap says, "Use me." Steve picks it up. It's surprisingly heavy. Beneath it, on the box, is a short list of instructions. "You won't need lube," it says. "Just position it and press the button on the bottom. The rest will just happen." The thing has a long, slender protrusion, about the size of one of Tony's fingers, and the base is wide enough that Steve isn't worried about it accidentally slipping inside as well. Despite it being entirely made of metal, it feels perfectly smooth under Steve's exploratory fingertips. Nothing to catch on or drag at him inside. He can't tell if that's a good thing or not. He's already conflating the device with the suit, whether it's a good idea or not. The paint job, partially, but also because there's something about the suit that Steve wants. Maybe just the idea that, in the suit, Tony actually probably could manhandle Steve in such a way that Steve would have to really struggle against to get away. He considers waiting. He's tired, and it will still be there in the morning. But his cock is dragging his pajama bottoms into a tent. He picks it up and carries it with him into the bedroom, shedding his pajamas as he crosses the room to get to the bed. He wonders if this thing is designed to actually get him off, or if he'll be even harder afterward. He wouldn't put it past Tony to leave him desperate that way. Nevertheless, he lies down on his bed and positions himself, the small tip of the thing pressed against his hole. He takes a deep breath and pushes the button. He feels the lube drip from the tip and spreads it carefully before he slides the device inside cautiously. It's cool and unfamiliar, but it stretches him a little, the bottom of it wider than the tip, and Steve breathes out heavily as it does. He grips the sides of the base and rocks it gently, shivering. And it's good, but Steve isn't sure what else he's supposed to do. Even as he's wondering, his phone rings. Steve would ignore it, except he's certain it's Tony. He fumbles for it on the bedside table and eventually stabs at the answer button.
"Fuck, finally," Tony breathes. "I didn't think you were ever getting home."
"I don't know what to do," Steve says without embarrassment.
"That's the beauty of it, Captain. You don't have to do anything. Put the phone on speaker."
Steve struggles with that for a few seconds before Tony talks him through the right screen to engage the speakerphone.
"Now put it on your pillow."
Steve does.
hands trembling a little.
How long did it last?
Tony asks, his voice greedy and a little manic. It took 3 hours before it started to wind down, Steve admits. He nudged at the toy inside him and inhales at the movement inside him.
Don't touch,
Tony murmurs. Steve reluctantly draws his hand away. Tony's voice, warm and confident in his ear, makes Steve blush to know that Tony knows what he's doing at the same time that it soothes him. He doesn't need to know what he's doing. Tony does.
Lengthen. 50%,
Tony murmurs, and Steve doesn't have time to be puzzled as the thing inside him shifts and grows, pressing deeply into Steve. Steve's breathing stutters as he wiggles against his sheets, resisting the urge to slide his hand back down between his thighs.
Good?
Tony asks. Yes, Steve gasps. Tony! He would do almost anything for Tony to be here, to be able to see Tony's face. Tony says,
Width, 40%.
And the shift inside Steve is even more dizzying and abrupt as the shaft of the thing Tony had made for him widens, stretching Steve's hole and pressing against him inside, forcing him to open wider. Steve groans at the feel of it and winds his hand in the sheets. He can feel himself trembling at the invasion, at the bizarre way that it feels both impersonal and definitively connected to Tony at the same time.
This is me fucking you, Captain,
Tony says.
Taking your ass without laying a finger on you.
Steve chokes out something that probably can't be considered a response.
Penetration, 20%,
Tony says. And the thing inside Steve starts to move, smoothly sliding in deeper and then back. The movement only inside. The base of the thing is pressed still against Steve's hole. Steve pants and tries rocking his hips, but the movement inside him is inexorable and not quite enough.
Prostate simulation,
Tony murmurs, and the whole thing twists and arches, until the tip is glancing against that place inside Steve that makes him arch and groan hoarsely. He can feel his body damp with sweat again. And it's good, it is amazing, and makes Steve feel entirely helpless at the same time. But he still wants Tony there with him, wants Tony to see and tell Steve how he looks. Want you here, Steve pants. And Tony gives him a low chuckle.
I want to be there. I want to see. But this is going to have to be enough this time.
He doesn't say why, and Steve doesn't ask. He just whines, and Tony says,
Not him.
Steve has no idea what that means until there is an abrupt press against his hole, the device widening outside him as it presses forward at the same time. Steve cries out, half pain and half surprise, as the thickness forming at the base pushes, pushes, and then stretches Steve's hole wide as it finally works its way inside. He can feel it inside him, pressing him open. What? He moans. Tony, what? Tony says,
Penetration, 50%.
And abruptly, Steve can feel the whole device shifting inside him, pulling out this time so that he can feel it stretch his hole, and then shoving its way back inside, so that Steve's head rocks back and he whines.
Width 60%,
Tony says, and Steve writhes as it stretches him, the thick knot at the base holding it inside, even as it drags out and then in again. And it doesn't feel like a cock, not really. And Steve's mind is jagged with humiliation at the idea of coming apart for it, but he can feel it happening. Harder, he pants, helpless and begging.
Penetration 70%,
Tony says obligingly, and Steve's hips jerk and rock upward.
Good. That's good,
Tony murmurs.
Just take it. Don't think.
And some of Steve's humiliation recedes at the instructions, while the rest of his body tenses and writhes. Neat, Steve begs, not entirely sure what he's begging for. Tony, neat.
Pulse,
Tony says, and the thing expands inside his ass, pressing him open and jabbing against his prostate. And Steve whines.
Lengthen 70%. Penetration 85%.
And though Steve's body isn't jerking in time with another body, he is all over his bed, hips jerking and back arching. And he wants to come so badly, he can only whine.
Roll over,
Tony tells him. And Steve does it without question, his sheets abruptly pressed against his cock, feeling like the best thing he's ever felt.
Better?
Yes, please, Tony, please, Steve begs and jerks his hips down against his bed, while the arousal in the pit of his belly begins to twist and expand.
I'm going to come inside you,
Tony says, the toy jerking into and out of Steve. The thick knot just inside him, burning as it pulls back against his hole. Steve heaves out a breath, feeling gut-punched at how much he wants that. Even if it's not Tony, even this bizarre electronic extension of Tony. And he had missed it last time, missed the feel of Tony jerking into his ass. Please, Steve whines, please.
Prostate simulation, level 2,
Tony says. And the thing inside Steve shifts and is suddenly dragging its entire length along Steve inside. There, right there, where it's impossible to stop crying out hoarsely at each stroke.
Good, Captain. You sound amazing. You're taking it so well for me.
Steve realizes that Tony's voice is low and hoarse and hitching. And he imagines Tony stroking himself to the sound of Steve being taken apart by Tony's toy. And he clenches tight everywhere helplessly. Clenches his ass around the toy, which is still working him over.
You are you?
Steve groans. And Tony answers with a soft, throaty moan.
Almost. So close. Rub yourself off against your bed. Let me hear you,
Tony demands. And Steve works his hips fiercely, grinding, not holding anything back, letting his moans and sounds of desperation fill the air of his bedroom. Tony groans, low and deep, and says roughly,
now.
And Steve hears Tony panting, and the thing inside him grows thicker and jerks deeply. And the knot inside his hole pulses twice, hard enough to make Steve gasp. And then he can feel it pumping inside him, hot enough to become, slick enough to make Steve's breath stick in his throat. And then Steve is coming too, his cock feeling friction hot, and his balls aching as he struggles against the continued motion of the device inside him and shudders through his orgasm at the same time.
I'll stop,
Tony says, once Steve has stopped crying out and is just whining a little with oversensitivity. The thing in Steve's ass immediately stops pressing into him. He feels it withdraw and narrow, and a moment later it's sliding out of him, Steve's ass too loose to hold it in.
Loose right now,
Steve slurs, without an ounce of shame. Ready for cock. Could slip right in like you want. Tony lets out a long, shaky breath.
You are a dangerous man, Captain,
he says, sounding serious but also sounding satisfied, like he likes Steve that way.
I will definitely take you up on that at some point, but not tonight.
Cool. Steve pants and means it, though he's also, somehow, satisfied that it should be so. Tony laughs.
You have no idea. Tomorrow night, anytime after 6, I'm having Fury transfer all files electronically from this point on, so you can dispense with the briefcase.
He pauses.
How do you feel?
Steve struggles over onto his back. Like I just got molested by a tiny robot, he says honestly, his voice again a little slurred.
Yeah? Do you feel violated, Cap?
Tony's voice is a husky rasp. Yeah, Steve sighs. Yes, but...
Hmm,
is all Tony says.
Put the tiny robot in the dishwasher to sanitize it. I'll need to check on it occasionally to make sure it has all necessary fluids. But otherwise, it's yours to use as you like. Or yours to be used by as you like.
Don't know how to give it directions, Steve murmurs.
You don't need to. It alerts me when you use it. I can control it anytime I want. But it's programmed for certain things, so if I can't respond with specific instructions, it will run through variations of its programming. You're never to touch yourself while it's inside you.
Tony sounds like he's smiling, but his tone is sharp.
You can rub off against something, but you don't touch your cock. You'll either come on the dildo, or you won't come at all.
Okay, Tony, Steve sighs out, sleepy and sated.
You can give the all-stop command,
Tony says quietly.
Other than the button, that's the only control you have over it. But it's got a basic command dictionary and a random compliance logarithm. If you want something enough to beg, it will sometimes comply.
How? Steve whispers, shivering a little. How did you...
It's one of a kind. I made it last night. I couldn't sleep.
Tony sounds amused. I didn't sleep either, Steve confesses. I painted.
Will you be able to sleep tonight?
Tony asks. Yeah, I think so, Steve says. Well, I'm pretty relaxed.
Good,
Tony says with satisfaction.
Don't do anything else tonight. You can clean everything up tomorrow. I want you to roll over and go to sleep. You're going to have a busy evening.
Okay, Tony, Steve agrees sleepily. He rolls over so that he's facing the phone and pulls his cover up over his shoulders. The toy bumps up against his thigh. He ignores it.
Don't wear your uniform tomorrow,
Tony nearly whispers.
As lovely as you look in it, I'd like to see you dressed down.
Okay, Tony, Steve agrees.
Sleep well, Captain,
Tony says. A moment later, the phone beeps a notification of a disconnected call, but Steve is already well on his way to sleep. Steve sleeps until nearly 10 in the morning and wakes up groggy and perplexed at the angle of the light coming in through the open bedroom door. He struggles upright to get a look at the clock on the wall and simply gapes at it for a long moment. He never sleeps this late. Moreover, he never feels like he could turn over and sleep some more if he wanted to, like he does right now. His stomach rumbles, and he understands, at least, what had awakened him. He just sits for a moment, and then feels around the bed until he finds the toy Tony had made. For him. The metal is warm from being next to his skin. Steve considers lying back and pressing it into himself again. He shudders a little at the idea, and then forces himself to get up and slide on his pajama bottoms. Mindful of Tony's instructions, he takes the toy to the dishwasher and settles it on the top rack. He could add the handful of dishes in the sink. There's plenty of room. but he can't quite bring himself to wash a sex toy with anything that he's going to eat off of. Instead, he puts soap in the little compartment and closes and locks the dishwasher and turns the knob to start it. He eats cold leftover Chinese standing up in the kitchen, drinking 3 glasses of orange juice as he does. And once he's fed and hydrated, feels a lot more like himself. He showers thoroughly, blushing as he washes between his ass cheeks and the backs of his thighs, where he's sticky from the toy coming inside him. The memory of that pulsing pressure clenches in his belly and firms up his cock. Steve ignores them both and washes his hair and body, and then his cock, gingerly, not for pleasure, but just for personal hygiene. He shaves carefully and dresses in jeans, and he is both embarrassed and fiercely unashamed. His tightest t-shirt. He's not above trying to impress Tony. Honestly, it doesn't seem like he's above much of anything when it comes to Tony. He feels like he should be more bothered by that, but he just isn't. The idea of Tony's toy makes him blush and cringe a little, but the toy, combined with Tony's call, makes his chest and belly warm. It's nice to know that Tony hadn't been able to wait. Or, at least, that Tony had chosen not to wait. That Tony might actually want this as much as Steve does. Steve doesn't have any plans for the day. He'd have taken a run if he'd woken on time, but he still feels loose and relaxed from last night, and he doesn't feel the need to run, either to work out or to fill time until that evening. He ponders what to do to fill up the day when there's a knock at his apartment door. Steve starts a little in surprise. No one ever knocks on his door. Even Tony just breaks in whenever he decides to visit. But he goes to answer it anyway, since what else is he going to do? The woman outside is tall and willowy, a strawberry blonde, dressed in such a sleek, business-like skirt suit that Steve wonders for a few seconds if she has the wrong address. Then he recognizes her from her file and says, surprised, "Miss Potts, what brings you here?" "I'm sorry to drop in unannounced, Captain Rogers," she says, smiling. She's got a wonderful smile, open and welcoming. "May I come in?" "Sure, of course," Steve says, and steps away from the door so that she can move past him into the apartment. Steve shuts the door and watches her look around. He realizes too late that the painting of the arc reactor is still on his easel. There's nothing to be done about it, except watch her look at it, head a little cocked, as though in curiosity. "Mr. Stark mentioned that you were an artist," she says. "It's an interesting project." "It's one of the most amazing things created by mankind," Steve says. "I could hardly help myself." "I'm surprised he let you see it," Miss Potts says, abruptly looking at Steve now, her gaze intent. "Honestly, so was I," Steve says, and doesn't expand on that. Miss Potts watches him for another handful of seconds, and then, apparently, decides to let it go. "Is there something I can do for you, ma'am?" She laughs, throaty and honestly. "Please, Pepper, I don't let any of the beautiful young men call me ma'am." Steve blushes, and she laughs again. "Tony was right. You're completely adorable." Steve isn't sure what to say, so he repeats the question. "Is there something I can do for you?" "Actually, it's what I can do for you," Pepper says firmly. "Tony mentioned that your wardrobe currently consists of things strictly for work and things strictly for play, since you just got back from the war." Her brow furrows in concern, as though she isn't sure she ought to mention it. "It's pretty slim," Steve agrees, mostly to soothe her. "It's not that I don't have the time or the money to expand it. I just..." He trails off,
unsure of how to explain. You're used to shopping to fit a limited budget, and you don't know where to go now that your resources are less limited? How did you know that? Steve asks, perhaps a little sharply. Pepper doesn't seem bothered with it. Mr. Stark does background checks on all of his employees. I don't work for Mr. Stark, Steve says. Actually, you do, Pepper tells him. The SHIELD liaison position is paid for by Stark Industries, regardless of your other sources of income. Your background check showed a large deposit a few months ago that was designated as a military windfall. If you wanted to tell either me or Mr. Stark exactly what that's about, I assure you we're both dying to know. And you're currently drawing a salary from the U.S. Army, from SHIELD, and from Stark Industries. Of the three, you probably won't be surprised to know that only Stark Industries is paying you what you're actually worth. Anyway, she waves a dismissive hand. Not the point. The point is, your background check made it clear that you had a very low-income childhood previous to the Army. Tony thought you might need a hand figuring out where to shop and how to get what you need here. Steve blinks stupidly in response and reminds himself to take a look at his own background as soon as he gets the chance. It seems like SHIELD has managed to leave in several general details without any of the damning earlier timeframe stuff. It seems like something he should have been given, so at the very least, he knows what he's allowed to talk about. Steve sighs. Well, he's not wrong, he admits. I just didn't think he was going to do anything about it. He looks at Pepper. That is, I mean, obviously you have better things to do. She laughs again, brightly. I have a mountain of paperwork, that's true. The question is whether or not I want to do that, or if I'd rather take part of the afternoon off to go shopping with one of Tony's very few friends. She gives him a calm look, though she's still smiling slightly. You can have three guesses, but the first two don't count. Steve smiles. I don't know how to talk to people, he warns. You're doing fine with me, Pepper says, and grabs his hand. I'll worry about the rest of them. Steve goes shopping with Pepper. He's awkward about picking out things he likes and doesn't, and once she catches on to that, she sends him into the dressing rooms and has him wait until sales staff bring things in for him to try on. Then he ends up doing some kind of weird modeling exercises, while Pepper sits, sipping in an iced coffee, and tells him to go try on the red shirt with the same slacks and come back and let her see. Steve doesn't see the appeal of this at all, but Pepper seems to be having a great time. The gray with a silvery sheen and the black and blue striped, she tells the clerk. Can you not see the shoulders on him? Like with Tony's tailor, Pepper only lets him bring home one outfit. Slate gray slacks and the dark gray button-up with a silvery sheen. And leaves the rest at Mr. Oldham's to be fitted. Mr. Oldham apparently knows Pepper well enough to be pleased to see her, and the two of them chat about the fabrics and cuts amicably while Steve waits and wonders when it will all be over. Mr. Oldham accepts the three bulging shopping bags from Steve, giving him a brief, narrow glare, and then beams at Pepper. Pepper walks back to Steve's building with him, chatting mostly about what ensemble is going to look best on Steve. Steve isn't sure how to tell her that he'd hated their outing, especially because he had been absolutely right about shopping. He never would have managed it without her help. It wasn't until they're in front of his building, Pepper's car crawling along discreetly behind them, that Steve realizes that he had, at no point, been asked to fork over his debit card for anything. Pepper makes a shushing noise, as though she can read his mind. Stark Industries has accounts with every store we went to, and you are not even close to the first employee we've assisted with wardrobe difficulties. Even I have used them, and I make a ridiculous amount of money. She smiles kindly at Steve and rests a hand on his forearm.
Tony isn't trying to buy you. I didn't think he was, Steve replies, surprised. I just feel like I'm taking advantage. Pepper shakes her head. Her smile goes a little edged. Don't. If you're ever taking advantage, I promise you that I'll tell you, even if Tony might not. This is just Tony's way of making sure you know that you're one of his people. Steve shifts uncomfortably. All the press says that Tony and Pepper are an item. Even their files at S.H.I.E.L.D. had stressed that the two of them enjoyed a close, personal, as well as professional, relationship. It's the first time Steve has considered that he might be poaching, and he doesn't like the way that feels at all. May I ask you a personal question, Miss Potts? Steve asks softly. Pepper, she says. And you may. Are you and Mr. Stark romantically involved? Steve hopes his embarrassment at the question isn't as obvious as it probably is, but he feels like he has to ask it. We were, briefly, she says. I think we both knew it wasn't going to work out. We're very good friends, but we're not dating. She bites her lip a little, giving Steve a narrow look that, while piercing, is still fairly friendly. Why do you ask? Steve blushes and looks away, trying to think of a good answer. Pepper laughs, but kindly. I wondered, she says. Good luck to you, and I'm not trying to warn you off, but Tony, well, he can be kind of oblivious about things, and he doesn't have a good track record for longevity. She rests her hand on Steve's arm again. Don't let that discourage you, though. He's already, well, let's just say that while Stark Industries often clothes its employees, they don't usually get the CEO as their personal shopper. I appreciate, Steve begins, but Pepper snorts. You hated every second of it, she says knowingly. But don't worry, you're not likely to have to do it again anytime soon. The stores we visited will keep your measurements and style preferences on file, and you can shop online and have things delivered directly to Oldham's for fitting. Never shopped online, Steve admits, which Pepper does respond to you with surprise. I'll come up for 10 minutes, just the basics, she decides, and marches Steve up to his door. It's more like half an hour. But once Steve grasps how the system works, he has no problems. Pepper bookmarks 2 dozen stores for Steve to choose from, and then refuses to let Steve stop her when she creates accounts for him and fills in the billing section with Stark Industries information. Pepper, Steve objects, almost whining, he's embarrassed to note. Steve, she says sharply. He shuts his mouth and looks at her. You can change the billing anytime you want, but believe me when I tell you that you could buy out every store that you have an account with, and it would still not put a dent in Stark Industries' budget. Besides, she smiles a little, eyes at half-mast. Tony will love seeing you wear things he paid for. She's very matter-of-fact about it. Steve's face feels like it's going to burst into flame. She pats his cheek. It's fine, she murmurs. It really is. Thanks for doing this for me, Steve says, helplessly sincere. Pepper grins. You are a pleasure to do things for, Steve Rogers. Give me your phone. Steve hands it over and lets Pepper enter her number in it. If you need anything you don't know how to get, you call me. I may not always have time to see to it personally, but I can always spare a minion or two to help you out. Promise me. I promise, Steve says with a little sigh. You're being too good to me. Pepper's face grows serious. Tony tells me you almost died in the war. Steve nods and swallows, but says nothing. He also says that you're the first liaison from either S.H.I.E.L.D. or the military that doesn't act like he owes you something. He doesn't owe anyone anything, Steve says, surprised. Pepper nods. But it's a rare man that thinks so, Steve. It's even rarer for Tony to recognize it and want to make something out of it. Her tone is candid. He doesn't have a lot of people in his life that don't expect anything of him other than for him to be Tony. He thinks you're one of them. I was dubious, but I'm not anymore. I hope you'll stick around, and if there's anything I can do to make that happen, all you have to do is call. Even if you just need to rant about Tony's more infuriating habits, I can handle that for you. Just don't bail. I'm still a commissioned officer in the U.S. Army, Steve reminds her solemnly. As long as it's in my power, I don't intend to bail, but I don't always get what I want. Pepper's look is grim. We can take care of that too when the time comes, she says. Steve considers that and decides not to ask. Better not to know things he might have to disavow knowledge of later. Pepper, Steve says. She smiles widely at him for using her name. Thanks. Anytime. I mean it. She surprises him by wrapping her arms around his waist and giving him a firm, friendly hug. Steve hugs back gingerly, ultra aware of his strength, but wallowing in it anyway. He can't remember the last time he'd been hugged. Thanks, Steve says again, maybe a little unsteadily, as she pulls back and gives him her warm, kind smile. It was my pleasure, she says, and Steve is pretty sure she's telling the truth. Less than an hour after Pepper leaves, there's an unprecedented second knock at his door. Steve, bemused, answers it. A man in sunglasses gives him a long, speculative look, and then holds out a hand and offers him a small rectangular piece of plastic. Contracts, he says shortly. If, for some reason, you're in danger of losing the device, destroy it. Steve examines the device for a moment. He doesn't know what to do with it, but he's sure Tony will. It's a flash drive, the man tells him. He's got sandy hair and is short but built broad, wide shoulders and chest, thick biceps visible through the short sleeves of his t-shirt. You're an agent? Steve asks. The man gives a single nod. Clint Barton. Either bring the device to Fury yourself when you're done with it, or call S.H.I.E.L.D. and someone will come pick it up. It will be someone you recognize. So for now, probably me or possibly Coulson. If you don't recognize the pickup agent, do not release the drive. Clear, Steve says. You look great, by the way, Barton says. Modern clothes suit you. Ah, Steve says, a little surprised by the fact that Agent Barton clearly knows about him. Thanks. Barton smirks. See you later, Captain Rogers. Steve watches as he turns on his heel and walks off, all grace and economy of motion. Definitely a trained fighter. He wonders if delivery and pickup of the flash drive is a punishment detail for him, or a sign of S.H.I.E.L.D.'s faith in him. Steve closes the door, locks it, and tosses the flash drive in his palm. Then he changes out of his new, modern clothes and back into his jeans and t-shirt. A small part of him wants to wear the new clothes, mostly, he thinks, because of what Pepper had said. That Tony would like seeing Steve in clothes that Tony had bought for him. But he's more concerned about following Tony's instructions, which had been to dress down. The new clothes might be considered dressing down from his uniform, but they're still pretty upscale. Steve makes himself an omelet for dinner, tossing in fresh onions, mushrooms, and peppers with grated cheese. He eats a little early because Tony had told him to. Not this time, but the last time. And he suspects it has to do with bedroom athletics and uncomfortably full bellies. Or office athletics, so far. Though it had been bedroom last night. But that had been quick, really. Steve is blessed with a very brief refractory period, but he also seems not to have much in the way of restraint, either. He isn't sure if that's because of his lack of experience, or if it's more down to the kind of sex he's been having. He wonders if not being allowed to touch himself will help him with his restraint, or hinder it. He puts it out of his mind while he strips down his bed and remakes it with clean sheets. He'd have to wash the ones he'd come all over last night. Then he takes the toy out of the dishwasher and places it experimentally on the bottom square of the box it had come in. The box? Steve had thought it was plastic. Now he isn't sure what it is. Beeps and folds up around the toy, hissing a little as the top closes. He can't quite keep himself from grinning a little at the fact that Tony had made him a sex toy, and then made that sex toy a tiny, innocuous safe. He puts it in the drawer of his nightstand.